Welcome to the Lexing Cash Podcast, boys. Today we got a good one. So today we're going to cover three things: value versus insight, and why giving more value might not be the answer. Two is how to be a coach, how to be a consultant, and how to be a mentor, depending on what your clients need from you. Right now is churn season. People are leaving. How do you get people to stay but getting better at your craft? And the last thing we're going to cover is hot content takes. Why you should not be aspirational and instead should aspire to be the man instead and the leader that your followers need. See you inside. I want to talk about leadership. So often I see followers, I see like content creators want to lead, but they don't know where they're going. So often when they come up with the problem of, I don't have good engagement, people don't believe me, people don't treat me like I wish they treated me, I think it's often because, well, it's because you don't know where you're going. So I realized that my marketing, maybe, I don't know if you've seen this with your clients, my marketing is strongest when I put out openly what I believe in and what I want for the people I work with. The clearest example of this is when I put something called the code. So the code was just a picture of a notebook split in half between what content creators do and what cash creators do. So content creators chase prospects. We don't do maybes. We only do yes or no's. Content creators sales with sales calls. We just use a Google Doc. Content creators are open all the time. We close doors because we understand that power goes to the most limited resource, stuff like that. And the response I got to putting my code out there and kind of being willing to be a leader, that has been some of the wildest responses I've ever seen in my marketing. And I'd like to see more coaches do that. Be willing to lead and let people know what things you believe in and what is your code. Do you do something similar or do you have any thoughts on that?
I agree. I think it's the way I kind of look at it is like it's almost like you're trying, especially for coaches. I think the way a coach should approach things is you kind of have to create a common enemy in your marketing. You know, the other side of the fence or your enemy in your marketing is essentially the people who are doing things the way that you don't want to do them. The people who are doing things the way you used to do them, right? So that's like the enemy. It could be a person. It could just be an idea. So like for you, right, you might have ideas in the coaching space that you're just ruthlessly against. And I think your marketing then has to be essentially, it's almost like, and this is how I do mine, it's almost like I'm trying to unfuck my prospects. It's like, I feel like my prospects have these common beliefs that were given to them from some guru or something. And basically all of my marketing is to unfuck those beliefs. So for example, a practical example of this is that I think that you should use viral concepts and viral frameworks in your content and then just add your own unique spin. But there was a lot of really bad guru marketing out there where it was like, you shouldn't do anything that's platitude-y or anything like that. And the most famous one that I've talked about is the top 10 books, right? It's like, you've seen a top 10 books video from Layla Hormozi, Cody Sanchez, Alex Hormozi, Patrick Bet-David.
What is it, minute two? Since you mentioned the Hormozi, 250. Almost broke your record.
But it's just because they're the big ones, right? And you see they all have these top 10 book lists, right? But they're all different lists. And I think there was like maybe a year's worth of programming from some gurus, maybe to sell a course. They were just like, don't do any content that's proven viral. And they basically just said, don't do platitudes. But you don't have to do platitudes in a way where there could be copy-pasted by anyone. You should still be uncopy-pastable. But if you put your own unique spins on things, you're allowed to follow viral frameworks. It's actually a cheat code to getting impressions and to growing your account and to doing all these things. So that's like, for me, that's my enemy, and my marketing is essentially unfucking those beliefs.
About the uncopy-pastable thing, I changed my mind. I think it's okay to be copy-pastable sometimes. I change my mind as I often do.
This is the nuance and change your mind podcast.
Yeah, that's right. This is the we don't take accountability for our own beliefs podcast. But honestly, man, I used to think that everything needed to be uncopy-pastable. And often when I have the words always, never, all, none, it kind of hurts me because it understands that there's no nuance when everything really is nuanced. But I used to think it should be uncopy-pastable, and if it should be in anybody else's feed, it can't be in yours. Yes, to a point. But if I have a thought that maybe...
Hell yeah.
I'll post it today. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we're going.
Yes, welcome, brother.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm back, brother.
We're back.
Yeah.
JK's now going to start ghostwriting soon.
Yeah, okay. That's a stretch. Okay, so I posted it today. You make more money when you're willing to say no. Or I posted another. What was it? We don't do maybes. It's a yes or a move on, right? You could copy and paste that, right? You could copy and paste that and you'll still be okay. But it is something I truly believe in. So I think that when I said everything should not be about you, and you shouldn't be in a position where anybody can copy paste you, that was kind of exaggerated. I changed my mind on that. As long as you believe in it and it's true to you and you live through that code, which is something we can get into later, the importance of living your message more than telling what your message does. But yeah, I was wrong. So I admit it. Sorry, guys.
I just think it should be if we are remembered as anything on the podcast, I want it to be the podcast where we're not like hard stuck on these like constraints and beliefs. I think that we're both really good at this kind of like first principles thinking, where we're just like, we just kind of say why to everything. Like, we never just get stuck in our own ways. And I think that's important because, especially in content, we're both in the content game at the end of the day. It changes so fast. Like, what we were doing in 2021 is a lot different than what we're doing now. You know what I mean? Like, look at the threads that we were writing, even on my account, on 2021, 2022 versus now. It's like the content game changes so fast. So, like, I feel like it's important, as, you know, a partially content-driven podcast, that we have that nuance. I think one of my gripes, one of the reasons I stop listening to a lot of podcasts, is because sometimes I feel like they're too much stuck in like, you need to do this, it's this way, it's this way. I know you've always said this too, and like, it just gets in your head, right? So I think the nuance is important.
That's important. What you said there is important. It tells you that things are black and white, or like, they start programming into like weird beliefs. Like, I'll tell you one thing, like, you know, this whole status game versus what is it, Naval calls it zero-sum games and positive-sum games. So zero-sum games is which Marcus and I can't win at the same time. You're one and I'm two. Positive-sum games is where we can both win. Entrepreneurship is a positive-sum game because, you know, everybody can win, right? But I was watching the Formula One Season 6 series on Netflix. And now that I kind of, you know, I've been like off that, now that I got back into that, I kind of see what they're doing. It doesn't pass for like 5 minutes before anyone saying Formula One is brutal. Everybody's coming for your place. People are going to take your spot. If you don't perform, you're out. It is this constant reminder of zero-sum gaming. And when you listen to people who only talk in black and white, it starts tainting your view into only seeing black and white, which is like super bad. Like, it feels off, right? So this is why I'm big on listening to nuance. But nuance is not sexy. Nuance doesn't sell, so it feels uncomfortable. People don't want to do it.
Yeah, it's funny. I've actually, a practical example of this for me, and I always struggled with it because I kind of grew up playing video games a lot. And I always heard a lot of people saying, if you play video games, you're not going to make money. You can't play video games. Can't do this. And then eventually I got to a point where I was like, okay, but I'm starting to read these biographies and I'm like, well, Elon Musk like stayed up all night and played fucking video games, and he's like a trillionaire. Like, what's going on here? Like, who's lying? And what I realized is neither answer is correct. It's a gray area. And then I started applying that slowly to a lot of different things. And I actually had this talk with a team member of mine recently, and they basically were saying that when they write something, they have all these rules. I need to hit this line count and this many words here, and this needs to be structured this way. And I was like, dude, you need to apply first principles thinking to this. And it's like, I don't ask
dude, you need to chill.
Yeah, no, literally. And I was like, I personally, like the way when I write, I don't say I need to do this, this, and this. I don't have this structure and this framework. I literally just start writing. I'm like, this would bang. Like, this would do well. Like, what's going to do well here? This sounds good. Like, very basic, fundamental questions when I write. And that's how I try to apply things to everything in business. It's just like very basic.
That's interesting, because I do the opposite. When I start writing, I think this is probably going to suck. Like, that is I'm not kidding you. That is actually the dialogue that I tell myself, because when I'm like, this will bang, I feel a lot of unnecessary pressure. When I'm like, this is going to absolutely bomb, it's nice, because like I find that the faucet is on and I can keep writing.
And yeah, I think now that we're writing 1,000 posts a month for, you know, almost 2 years now, it's just like so removed from the outcome. I'm like, I almost know exactly what the averages are going to come out to over a long time horizon. Like, you know, you could have a viral thread today and then not go viral for 6 months and then a viral thread in August. But like at the end of the year, your growth is what it was going to be anyways. You know what I mean? Like, for me, it's become a very steady thing and not so much kind of this like rocket fuel thing. So I've kind of removed myself. I guess that's a lot different than a lot of people, especially YouTube and some other platforms where they look at growth as like this like meteoric thing. I just look at it as like steady input, output, very basic, like a system. You don't have to overthink it.
When you say output, what is it you're measuring? Are you measuring likes, cash, leads?
So we actually only measure specifically, so we measure followers. That's like our main content metric. We look at impressions, but we don't really record it or track it anywhere. We just kind of report on it. So the main thing is followers, and then we go over to sales, of course, cash collected, and if there's a booked call system in for that client, it's booked calls. So those are really like the three core metrics we're looking at. So then we can do cost per follower, cost per call, and ROAS and all those things.
Well, I think it's creative on this one. Let's talk about today how we write. So I'll start with how I write and then you go over how you write. So I find that the way it works for a lot of people with writing is actually, you guessed it, the MBTI personality test. So if you haven't done that, it's very important on this podcast. So we did the MBTI personality test. And Marcus and I are both a P. So P at the end means prospecting. So prospecting people are basically people who like to fuck around and find out. J's are usually people who like, you know, the whole Notion dashboards and the spreadsheets and Excel. We don't do that, right? So for me, writing is a lot about I can be an awesome writer or I can be a horrible writer, but I vary between those two states. So I am the worst writer in the world for the 30 minutes that I try to force a piece of writing. But I am a really good writer for the 20 minutes that I'm on the treadmill and I have an idea and I type it on my phone. So what I like to do is I like to take advantage of emotional states. I will be doing things that are not related to writing because I have this inner belief that, like, all things equal, if you leave me alone, I will create. So that is like a belief I have. I am a creator. So when I take a break or I'm doing my own things, suddenly an idea will hit. And usually I will type better stuff on my phone than I type on my computer just because I have it there. So I'll start on the treadmill or I'm walking or I'm just chilling and be like, something hit. Now, when I start writing, I'll try to overshoot. So let's say before I would say I'm going to write one email. Now, when I am in that flow, I tell myself I'm going to write 10 emails. Do I write 10 emails? No. But maybe I'll write two, which is double what I first intended. So by shooting that high, I set up that metric. It allows me to like chill, know that this is probably going to suck. And I put a lot of content out because writing is much harder than editing. Being in that state is really hard to get into. So once you get there, take advantage of it, shoot high. Even if you don't get to 10 emails, maybe you'll write 2.5, probably. And then you edit the next day or you edit later. You just don't write and edit on the same session, you know? So that's what I do. I'll do a lot of feel. I overshoot and then I will come back some other day and write it because everybody's a bad writer if you don't give them prep time. Everybody's a bad writer if you don't give them editing time. So it needs to sit. It needs to rest before it gets posted. That's how I write.
Like making a steak. You got to let it rest before you eat it.
Really?
Yeah. You're supposed to let it rest for like 5-10 minutes.
What happens if you don't?
You die.
I see.
Maybe this is a bad belief.
It's like, I've never heard that.
I'm surprised. Yeah, all the steak maximalists in the chat are gonna know. They're gonna be like, yeah. But what you said about kind of when you're getting all of your creativity when you're on runs and stuff like that, it reminds me, I don't know where I read it, maybe you'll know, but it was essentially you have to have kind of like multiple different modes, right? So the editing mode is obviously that final phase, but before you even write is kind of having some sort of diet where it's like an information kind of creativity diet. So for you, it's like walking on the treadmill, probably going on walks. I know that's what Napoleon does and stuff like that. But for me, it's like walks, but it's also consuming. It's driving. All of these things is where I always get my ideas. And it's such a blessing and a curse because like you sit down at your computer and you're like, okay, this is my time to write. And then you have no ideas. When you're walking on the treadmill and your hands are busy or like working out, then it's like, okay, I get all my ideas. But for me, I do the same thing. I made a tweet actually. I don't know where I have it, but it was like, go on walks, record voice memos when you're driving and stuff like that. Listen to podcasts. Like for me, I have an information diet that kind of gives me all of the ideas. And then, yes, I have a writing session and then I have an editing session as well. I think that's important just for like a practical writing tip for the audience. It's like you absolutely have to edit separately. I've never seen anyone edit and write in the same session and be able to catch everything. It's just not, I don't think it's possible.
I agree with you. I'll give you another practical tip. When you write, you're only allowed to think about people who have given you money. Some of the worst sales copy is when you think about people who have not given you money. The leads, the wishy-washy, the maybes, the no's, the tire kickers, because they make you needy or defensive or aggressive. And that's when you mess up the writing. Like, writing copy for me is easy because I only think about people who have already given me money. I only think about clients. So when I write, it's like a conversation, or I'm reliving a conversation that has already happened in the past. You can only think about people who have given you money when you start writing. Key.
Speaking of sales copy, I have a question for you. I think I've heard at least two or three people say they really like the likesaincash.com landing page that says, like, super basic coaches and consultants only, join, I don't know, 20,000 readers, whatever. What is your thought process in terms of, like, simplifying things when you're writing sales copy or writing anything? Because I feel like you're really good at, like, dumbing things down to the most simplest form when you write. And that landing page, like I said, I think at least two or three people have said, I really like this landing page, likesaincash.com.
I appreciate it. I try to make my offers very touchable. I like making things touchable. And what I mean by that is, when you give people something touchable, it's easy to get them to point at it, which relieves their anxiety. And that is the feel-good feeling that people get. An example of this is, I used to run an offer workshop. I said, okay. But then I changed it to the $2,000 offer template. And I made it really nice in Excel, you know? So at the end, you could leave with a template, something touchable. I also used to have a reduce your no-shows training, right? So reduce your no-shows training. Cool. But then I changed it to something touchable, which is the Calendly kit. This is a kit you copy and paste into your Calendly, and it reduces your no-shows. I used to have, like, content training, but then I said, at the end of this, you're going to have 3 weeks planned out in this nice content calendar with all the posts you need to make. So you can leave with something tangible, touchable, that you can grasp. So every time I sit down to write, I think about, what is something that I can give that is something people can point at? Because if they can point that, it relieves anxiety, which will make them like it more.
I have a hilarious example of this. And I feel like one thing that you're good at doing is kind of almost like naming things. It's almost like it's essentially branding. And this is, it's funny because you're saying pointing, wrapping paper, et cetera, but it's branding. You're really good at branding. By the way, I like the logo. I know you didn't like the emojis. For context, for people listening, I told him he should go to the emojis. He didn't like it, but he figured out how to, once again, simplify it to its dumbest version. And what is it? It's like, I don't even know. It's just black.
Yeah, black and white. Dollar sign doesn't equal hard.
Likes. That's the like right there. But essentially what you're good at is branding. One thing I did is I had two different auto DMs. So originally, you might have seen this. I had I called it the ultimate Twitter swipe file. It kept going, like, it kept working over and over. I probably gained like 4,000 followers from it, and like probably like four clients. Like, it was crazy for me. And I recently did another one. I just called it like a viral swipe file. It did so bad because it didn't have the branding. It didn't have the wrapping paper. It was just a viral swipe file. And the other one was the ultimate Twitter swipe file. And that one probably had like 1,000x of performance. It's just insane. So I recently got kicked in the face with this. You need to put the wrapping paper and the branding on it if you want kind of like peak performance.
100%. Like, today I was working with a guy on his offer. He has the sales dojo, right? So he said he will give you the samurai sales script, or like samurai OS, that has allowed him to close however many books. But he said, but I need people to find their own style. I can't just give them the sales template, because if then people will copy it and it won't be effective. So I said, okay, check this out. Instead of calling it the samurai script, what we're going to do is we're going to give you the samurai script so that you can have your own Ronin script. You're going to go rogue with your own style. Dude, and I know it sounds silly, but it's awesome, man. It fit in so good. You want to brand your stuff even if it sounds silly. If you believe in it, it's not stupid.
Ooh, next podcast, we should have a segment on, have you seen this new show? I haven't watched it yet. This new show that just came out called Shogun.
No.
We're going to die. So it's this new show called Shogun. It's out on Hulu. It just came out yesterday. It has like some of the best actors. It's like basically a Game of Thrones level samurai show, and it's has 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, like a 100 rating. It's supposed to be that good. I think we'll both love it, especially as I know we're both big into that culture. So I think we're gonna have a segment on the next podcast talking about it, and we'll see if it's overrated, underrated.
We still gotta do the whole anime for 90 minutes podcast.
We're gonna start a whole separate channel of just anime reactions.
Nah, bro, it's gonna be the same channel. Welcome to the Likes and Cash podcast, but today we're going to talk about neither likes nor cash.
This is one thing that I it's funny because I do it for my clients, and I have this whole segment on this, but essentially it's like practicing what you preach, and it's very difficult as like an agency owner, especially with, you know, a dozen plus clients, because I feel like I'm always focused on my client stuff, and I'm like pushing these amazing strategies to them, and I don't even do it myself. But one thing that I want to do more of in my personal brand is kind of using all of the different pillars of myself. And this is a core thing, like Joe Rogan, right? He does, talks about aliens and MMA and politics and free speech and all this stuff. It kind of makes him Joe Rogan, even though he has guests from all other industries. And that's kind of like us, right? Like we obviously have the Likes and Cash stuff, the agency, the consulting, all that. And then we also talk about anime and travel and like weird stuff. And that's kind of what makes us, right? But I need to do more of that in my content. And I think it's important. Like, I think I used to do it a little more, but the more I get busy with the agency, it's an excuse. It's all cope.
Yeah.
I have to do it more in my stuff.
Let's zero in on what you said about it's important to live your own message. What did you say? Like,
practice what you preach.
Yeah, that. Practice what you preach. I think that being relatable doesn't sell as much as being the man. So if you try to be relatable, here are my flaws, here are my mistakes, it's okay, but nobody cares unless you are the man. And the best way to do this is to show, don't tell. What have your own unique methods done for your life? Are you traveling? Are you chilling? And you don't have to be an influencer guy to do this. Like an example of this is, it could be the Andrew Tate, you know, being in Dubai and doing all this stuff. It could also be the stay-at-home dad just posting that today he's just having a beer instead of going to work because his business is going well. It could be the stay-at-home mom that's just chilling and knitting because that's what she loves to do instead of having to go to work for someone. Or maybe she's with her husband or whatever. Like, being aspirational does not sell as much as being the man. And it can be as easy as taking a sheet of paper and writing, what methods do I use? And then, as we do with the Likes and Cash podcast, we caps lock it. So you name them. Marcos has the pesto pillars. I have the Likes and Cash funnel, the prospect inertia funnel.
These things are made up.
They do not exist, but we make them exist. And because we can show what they have done in your life, we give them life. And that's what drives really good marketing power. When you show, don't tell, that you're the man.
Yeah, it's kind of like when people say, you know, somebody's not truly dead until they stop getting talked about. Like, you can kind of keep the memory alive of, you know, a loved one if you just talk about the memory. It's kind of the same thing. It's like, nothing really exists until you actually start talking about it. And now I've made videos and podcasts and tweets and threads about the pesto pillars. It's essentially turned it into a real thing, but it doesn't exist in the real world. You know what I mean?
I mean, it does. It's on my whiteboard. So I guess it does exist, but...
How's that going for you? I see you recording shorts now, and I see you on the whiteboard, your whiteboard grind.
The whiteboard thing is so much easier than it's definitely my style, because I can just sit down 10 minutes unfiltered, one take, and just go and do it. Not one take, let's be honest. Sometimes two takes, but way better. I plan on doing it for a long time.
So what do you do for the audience? Like, what do you do?
For the whiteboard videos?
The whiteboard. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's super easy. If I'll be on a walk or a drive, I think of an idea, I put it in my notes app. And then on Thursdays, so Tuesdays is my writing and Thursdays is my recording. On Thursday, I'll just pull over this little chair. And I have all these markers, and I'll just start talking about a topic. So I've done, should you choose LinkedIn or X for your personal brand? And I kind of break down the target markets of each. And then I have another one where it's like the pesto pillars. And my next one is going to be kind of breaking down the 100K a month X funnel or Twitter funnel. And I'm just basically just targeting my ideal client, but I'm just doing it on a whiteboard, uncut, for 10 minutes a week.
So let's go deeper on it. I think that when you do those kind of stuff, it will work excellent if you give away insights, but it would bite you in the ass if you give away value. If you give away your exact DM scripts like I did and I regret it,
right?
And if you give away your own templates for a post, you would only attract other sellers. But if you gave insight on why LinkedIn matters, why the pesto pillars matter, that makes a lot more sense. So when you say do it for 10 minutes, what is it?
Yeah. So for example, and I wish I could bring the camera over, but like, for example, I have the five pesto pillars. And in the video, I don't just break down what the pillars are and what you should write. I break down what they actually do. What are the insights on what are they actually? So for example, personal and expertise are typically going to grow your audience. Social proof is typically going to convert your audience to sales. The trending and opinions is typically going to get you more eyeballs and impressions. So personal expertise is going to convert followers or impressions. Trending and opinions is going to generate impressions. And social proof is going to convert those followers. So it's kind of like a three-step process. And all five, you have to incorporate, in my opinion, to do all three of those things. And that's how you kind of, a lot of people, I feel like, got stuck on just growth or just sales or just impressions. I'm like, you can't do one of the three if you want to make money. You have to do all three, in my opinion, to have a good profitable personal brand. And it kind of goes back to like the showing weakness thing. I just thought about it. I'm like, I feel like if you're trying to monetize now, you shouldn't show current weakness, but I think you can show past weakness, like your story. Like for you, when you were a $200 virtual assistant, that was weakness, but you've already overcome it. So you're using it as the hero's journey. But if you're still at step one of your hero's journey and you want to be an authority now, you definitely cannot show weakness, because now people, they might follow your journey, but you're playing the long game, brother. Like you're talking about monetizing years down the line, because you still have to overcome that weakness and become an actual authority. So I think if you're going to go like the documenting my journey route, you can show weakness. But if you're trying to monetize today, you should show past weakness that you've already overcome, but don't show any current weakness in terms of maximizing sales. And that might be controversial, but
that was so fire. I loved every second of that rant. That was sick. People only care about the rags to riches story if you're in the richest part of the story, not in the rags part of the story.
Yeah, they'll cheer you on, truly. Like if you're in the rags, they're going to cheer you on. They're going to follow you. I actually know someone who's doing it right now, like a rags to riches, kind of like a weight loss journey. It's like, yeah, you're going to get a lot of followers, but you're not going to get a lot of buyers yet. You'll get buyers, but not yet. You have to actually hit the riches.
You said they are going to cheer for you.
For now.
It's important who they are.
Yeah.
Where, who are they? I think they are other sellers.
Yeah.
Which is not the people you want. So, you know, the whole indie hacker, the whole building in public guys, you know who follows them? Other indie hackers.
Other
building public guys.
Let's struggle together.
Yeah. Let's all be broke together. Just like when one guy gets success, man, I'm not going to get deep into that. But you know what I'm saying? Like you gotta achieve something. Like be the man. And people think it has to be like something like really remarkable. If you're at 5K a month, somebody at 1K a month, you're their hero. If you're at 10, somebody at 5, you're their hero. It's people try to be Dan Coe or Justin Welch. It's like, let's take it by steps.
Yeah.
Like instead of thinking about how to become the guy, how can you become the guy for somebody behind you?
Yeah, like for example, if you do the whole documenting my journey indie hacker thing and you start at zero, you build this big audience, you know, 10K followers, and then you finally announce, I'm at 10K MRR. Everyone that's like, congrats, oh my God, they followed your journey. You have 10K followers who are just checking your journey out, but they're not your ideal prospect. You know what I mean? Your SaaS product probably isn't for other indie hackers, right? That's the nuance, right? Is your SaaS product for other indie hackers? Yes, no, maybe. If yes, then congrats, you're one of the few, but most likely not. So that's why if you're going to actually do it, you should build an audience of people that are going to use your software or people are going to use your program or et cetera. So for me, I'm always trying to build.
We talked about this last time.
Yeah, I'm trying to build an audience of like business owners, CEOs, you know, et cetera, not agency owners, which is why I rarely talk about building an agency. You know what I mean? And that's important. I think it's nice to have those, like the My Story stuff, but it's such a small subsegment of what I'm trying to do. And I know it's not going to convert any of the sales. What's converting the sales is, here's the case study of how I did this for a CEO. Here's the case study of how I did this for a business on X.
Yeah. Like we talked about this last time, the people who engage with your comment are not the people who buy your stuff. Real talk. People in your comments don't buy.
Yeah.
Like you saw this with your own community. They didn't join.
Yeah.
People who engage with you, they're like, for sure, JK, let's go. So much fun. They never buy. It's the hidden whales that I've never seen. Dude.
All the time. Like, who the fuck is this guy? I'm like, I see someone buy. I'm like, who?
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know you, but I love you. So thank you for existing. Like,
yeah.
Dude, this happened twice in the past week. I onboarded clients that I blocked. They were blocked. And they're like, JK, by the way, like, can you unblock me? I'm like, fuck. Oh, yes, I'll unblock you. Don't worry about it. Like, they keep watching this stuff. This is an example, man. people who engage in it are the people who buy it. So this is why you shouldn't care about peers. Like people in, right, the creator economy, they care too much about peers, not enough about prospects. And that's what fucks them. Because the human mind is excellent at winning the games it plays. But if you play the be famous game, you're going to win that game. If you play the be rich game, which in my opinion is easier, you're going to win that game. And it starts about choosing the game.
Hell yeah. One thing I've just started recently doing, and this kind of going back to the whole video game thing, is, and I started thinking about business as, and I saw this, I forget, oh, it's Alex Becker. I started thinking about business as like an infinite game. I'm just like, I don't know, maybe this helps with you, or maybe you've done this before, but for me, I've really removed my kind of like my core feeling and happiness from the success, immediate success of things. Like if I get a sale today, I'm not like, oh my God, yes. And if I, you know, churn a client, I'm not like, oh my God, no. I'm like, I just think so long-term now that it's helped a lot. Like I don't really have too much anxiety about business or anything like that. And I even recently started doing this in other facets of my life. Like I started jujitsu, which is essentially, you'd call that an infinite game, right? I call it an infinite game. So I started jujitsu. I started playing, this is crazy, I started playing Minecraft again since the first time since I was like 17, 18, 19. I used to play when I was younger as a teenager. I literally removed Call of Duty and started playing like Minecraft because I'm like, this is an infinite game where it's just like, it just primes my mindset. I play chess and I'm like trying to play more infinite games everywhere in my life. And I think it's starting to help. It's conditioned me to think so long term with things. And it's helped a lot with my mindset stuff. I don't know if you have any thoughts.
I love that. I have my thoughts, you know, on my Minecraft account is because I also started playing Minecraft recently. In Minecraft, I'm Jake.
Oh, I have to invite you.
Oh, yeah. Like, do it, bro. It's easy to remember. I'm JK Suolina.
Nice.
And sometimes, like, what is it? I think it's Microsoft that owns Minecraft, right? So sometimes Microsoft will send me emails. And I unsubscribe from all spam emails or like company emails, but they do start with, hey, JK Suolina, let me remind you about this new offer. And I like it, so I don't unsubscribe. It gives me a little validation, so I like it.
One thing that's so like, and this is on the business side, that's so commendable about them is like, I feel like every video game ever has a lifespan and it dies. I swear this is one of the only games that's been around since I was like, since my memory started. Like since I've had memory, I remember this game existing and they just keep adding new features. They only care about product. Like they're on like, they go 1.1, 1.2, 1.3 forever, like every year forever. Like that's how I want to treat my business. Like just a slight increase of the product, a slightly better, slightly better, slightly better, literally forever. And it's so until I quit business, you know what I mean? It's an infinite game. So I don't know if I'll ever retire. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but I'm like, if I retire, then I'm going to play golf and look at trees. I don't
know. Yeah, I've thought about it.
Too young to figure this out.
I have actually thought about it. Like at some point, I'm going to be like, guys, like, listen, man, I don't want to change the world. I just want to get rich. And at some point, I would be like, I got it. I want to move the goalposts.
I think I know what's going to happen. we're both going to actually retire and it's going to end up turning into a sabbatical and we're going to be like, all right, I'm bored.
Probably.
All right. Whether it's business or something else, it's going to be something.
It's going to be like, I'm bored. Now I want to buy an F1 team. So let's fucking go.
I do want to buy a soccer club. I want to buy an English, like a lower league team and just like bring them up from the trend. That's what Ryan Reynolds is doing. It's just like, have so much wealth. Yeah, he has a documentary on it through Amazon Prime. It's called Wrexham. They've went from basically non-league to like, I think they're in the fourth or third tier now and they're good.
How much have they paid? Like, how much did he pay?
I feel like he only paid in like the single or maybe like eight figures. I don't know the actual number, but I looked it up and it's like, you know, it's weird because the purchase price has nothing to do with how much you actually have to spend to keep it up and inject money and buy players. So
how much is it? Do you have any insight on the economics? How much does running a football team cost?
Well, the lower league teams, you can actually go and buy them for like, you know, a few million, but you know, you also have to, it's going to cost you millions a year to run the team. And at the highest tier, it's a, you know, billions of dollars. Arsenal runs at a loss. For example, Arsenal lost 50 million last year and they generated 450 million, I think, in revenue. The wage bill alone is 250 million. They're on track for profitability and it's worth 10 billion. So it's just like a game where you don't make any money. You basically do it for increasing the overall value to either exit or never exit and just increase your net worth. It's so fucked up.
I can tell that you're thinking more long term because in the beginning of the podcast you said at the end of the year X, Y, and Z. Like,
yeah,
people say at the end of the day, you're like, at the end of the year, kind of nice. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. And now it's like at the end of my life, at the end of my lifespan in my next life.
Okay. Okay. Now you're entering into VC capital, like venture capitalists congratulating themselves territory. Have you seen that page?
No.
Bro, it's a page dedicated. It's called VC Brags. It's on Twitter. So it's designed to see how venture capitalists brag about themselves. So an example of it, it'd be like, man, like being a firefighter must be tough. Going out there, fighting the fires, being dirty, putting your life on the line, almost as hard as being a venture capitalist and changing the world.
Changing the world one seed investment at a time.
It's like, you know, being in the trenches, responding to your emails at Starbucks.
Do you use Reddit?
I don't.
I had a client who was like, who basically he posted on Reddit, and it was essentially, he was a consultant or a coaching client, and he posted on Reddit his story, like, I made this much doing this business, and he got dozens of leads through it. And he was like, you should really think about adding Reddit to your like offer stack. And I'm like, is that really going to be a future offer as like Reddit marketing? I feel like Reddit's like the shark infested waters. Like, yeah, it could hit, but if it doesn't, you get destroyed. I don't know. I've never been like a huge Reddit guy. I don't know if you've ever thought about posting maybe like my $250 VA from Guatemala story on Reddit to see if you get clients. I think it'd be an interesting, a fun experiment. You're already a public figure. You already have hundreds of thousands of followers. What do you have to lose?
I'm not against it, because my content strategy is actually copy and paste. I cut the strategy. Okay, it goes as follows. So I start with email. I write a daily email, and then I will copy and paste it into platforms. Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Instagram, I'll add a picture of like a travel or whatever. And that's my cut strategy. That's the entire thing. But I try to post it one day later, because if I post it the same day, like kind of weird. And I do believe that people who give you more access to them deserve better treatment from you. So clients, I treat better than customers, which I treat better than leads, which I treat better than followers and so on, right?
This would crush.
I don't see why it would hurt. Copy and paste it. It's Reddit.
I think you should go to we're going to have multiple segments on this next podcast. r/entrepreneur. You do like the from $250 VA to seven-figure exit, and now I run a consulting agency where I travel the world, blah, blah, blah. You basically put your story on the Reddit. And we report back and see if you get leads from it. Because I think if you plug it at the end where it's like, and now I run a consulting business on how I did it with my social media following, blah, blah, blah. You might get some leads from r/entrepreneur. And then the other segment's going to be Shogun.
Done. I'm game. I like it.
Done. Yeah. Oh, you know what it should be? Thumbnail. Ready? It's going to be the Shogun Warrior. It's like a super... I'm most excited for the show because they have the best costumes. Like, surreal. It's basically going to be you with the Shogun face cutting the Reddit logo. Hear me out. That'd be
you
fire.
You're cooking.
I'm cooking today. I'm cooking.
Well, maybe do that. I just do copy and paste. Do you do copy and paste for your clients?
Like multiple platforms? Yeah. So we'll copy and paste some things on LinkedIn, but the format, I don't know if, do you reformat it depending on the platform?
Well,
you used to change out individual words, no? Like if it was like Twitter...
Yeah, but now because I think more about talking about the I would rather talk about the problem than the... Anyway, right. I don't do it anymore.
Yeah, so we do essentially copy-paste. You know, obviously there's nuance. And we'll also redesign into carousels and copy-paste that way onto Instagram. So Instagram carousels crush. So tweet pics and carousels on Instagram and LinkedIn. Sometimes carousels, but sometimes nowadays like copy-paste with the picture.
Text, mostly... Right?
Some, if the client does video, we'll repurpose it. But we're a text-based agency. So anything we create is text.
You know what's interesting? It's I started making more money on Instagram when I put out half the video content and I went harder on text. Does it mean that text is better than video on Instagram? No.
I think you need both.
But because I enjoy creating for text more. I believe that if you don't enjoy creating it, the audience won't enjoy consuming it. So, because this is the most enjoyable format for me, I think that people like it more.
Everyone that I know that makes the most money from Instagram has like a 50-50. They do essentially every other post. It's like video, text, video, text, video, text. It's almost like the text is converting the video, but it doesn't actually work that way. But from what I've seen, the best performers do both.
That's an insight. Well, that's value right there.
That's too much value. I'm taking that
away. Yeah, yeah. What is it? I see. Yeah. We'll take a step back and say you got to mix it up because most people have a certain mix. It depends on what you do. Anyway, what I'm trying to say about this instant vision value thing is, for some reason, it inspires a lot of like thoughts on people, but it's not that complex. It's like you're not trying to break anybody's beliefs. You're not trying to keep stuff from people. What you're really doing is just explaining why things happen, why things work, how things work. The simplicity of it is what attracts people. Like I started talking about whale bait versus fish bait. I got a lot of questions on how do I avoid fish? How do I attract my whales? And in my opinion, that's the wrong state of mind. Just focus on giving insight on why things work. And that simplicity is what gets you clients. When you think about that, it's like you're putting too much pressure on yourself. And I don't think it's helping you.
Yeah, I try not to have. I think pressure is a good word, if anything. I don't know how you kind of teach it to your clients, especially the people. This is a good question for you. How do you kind of coach people to not have pressure on themselves when they're, for example, at a lower level? Like they might not have kind of that cushion to not have the pressure. So what do you tell them?
I tell them that they can choose to be a good writer or a bad writer. It's really a choice, but it's more of a choice of timing. Like we can all have moments in which we cook. There's always times at which you have been single and somebody in a relationship asked you for advice and you gave them good advice, even though you were single, you were cooking, you were in a separate state. So I let people know you should be okay with it sucking. You know what, the way I learned to write like good in English, because my first language is Spanish, is I bought a course that said 500 words every morning and you don't care if they suck or not. I didn't really get good at prose or feel, but what I got the most from that practice was being okay with my writing not being good, because all of the monsters are inside your head. They're really not real. We suffer more in imagination than in reality. So if you leave that pressure, you'll be okay. And that's kind of, you're doing this to yourself. Like you're tripping. You're not a bad writer. You're just a bad writer right now. Chill, let it go, and you'll be okay.
Yeah. I think it's like, it's all skill stacking too. It's like,
what do you do?
I mean, this is like a weird thing, but it's kind of what you said before where it was like, never show weakness. Like for me, I kind of always understood that if I had this like pressure or if I felt weak, I wouldn't have authority. So I kind of just always like psyoped myself into knowing that it was going to work like eventually. You know what I mean? Like I never told myself like if I'm gonna, it's not going to work. Because if I did, I feel like that leaks into your content. It leaks into everything. Leaks into your sales calls. Like you ever been on a sales call with someone who's desperate? It's like you get on a sales call, you can kind of reeks when someone really needs the sale, and it's a turnoff, right? You got to get the ick. Like nobody wants to buy from someone who needs the sale. Same thing with content. It's like you don't want to write content from a place of like you need to convert this content. This content needs to go viral. It just comes off as desperate. So I feel like I always just psyoped myself into not needing as much and just kind of just putting it out there and trying to do the best work and just knowing in my head that it was going to work eventually. And it did.
You always had that. Like you're the same guy when you were paying more in cost than your rent. And now that you're rich in Miami, you're still the same guy. You're still detached.
Still playing Minecraft, still watching anime.
There you go. Well, you don't have the Naruto shirt, so I don't have a way to verify that, but I'll mail it to you.
The Naruto shirt only got booted because of the Bali trip. I had to downsize my wardrobe and I didn't have a storage facility or anything. It's unfortunate. I have a Naruto mug, and you can confirm because you were here and you used it.
It was a nice mug.
Or you saw it.
It was a nice mug. You also have really nice coffee. Hazelnut smelling. That was awesome. I'll give you that.
I cannot have it. I cannot have that coffee.
Why not?
I'm allergic to hazelnut.
Well, you had a few sips. Did you die?
No, I only smelled yours.
Oh, really? You didn't sip?
Yeah. Oh, maybe I did have a sip and I was like, fuck it. I don't remember.
Well, let me tell you, man, it's some good coffee. I'll tell you that much. Nah, maybe. You got anything else? I got a few things here.
Yeah, you can finish this off.
Cool. So I like to end in the distinction between a consultant, a mentor, and a coach. Because often this is a reason. I don't like calling, I tell my clients not to call themselves coaches or mentors or consultants or call themselves programs. Because I feel like it puts them in a box. That's one reason. The second reason is I think it's bad for marketing, but I think it puts people in a box. And I think that it'll be helpful for people who are maybe right now in February and March, It's what I call churn season. People are leaving because their New Year's resolutions, they're dead, or they don't have any more motivation. So if anything, now is a really good time to get good at helping your clients. And I think this distinction was quite helpful for me, and I think it'll be helpful for people listening as well. The distinction between a coach, a mentor, and a consultant. So often you are going to be switching between these three. Coach is helping someone find the answer within themselves. So sometimes when you coach, people will give you a solution and they're like, what do you think I should do? A, B, or C? A coach would be like, what will you do if you were coaching yourself? And then you find them get to the answer themselves. This is helpful for people who are like too in the weeds, and you can tell that they need more belief than they need tactics. So if you let them find the answer on themselves, then it's like they believe in their own answer, and if you validate the answer, they will go forward with confidence. Sometimes people need that. Second thing people might need is a consultant. A consultant is not as woo-woo. It's just telling you what to do. So people have a problem. Sometimes the answer is simple. You don't need for them to find the answer themselves. You can just tell them A, B, and C, do C. Easy. Sometimes you might need that, or the client might need that. And the third distinction is a mentor. A mentor is you doing the thing. So often, I'll try to explain, this happens especially with content. Somebody will like ask me a question on content, and I don't really know how to answer it, and there is no definite answer. So what I'll do is, you know what? Let me just write it as if I were you. So I can mentor them through it. I can do the thing and they can kind of rinse my hands and my brain and see how the thing is done. So jumping between that kind of hat of consultant, mentor, coach has been hugely beneficial for me to deliver the result for the client, because I know that sometimes you might be adding value to your client, but you're not adding the value that they need at the time. You're being a consultant when they need a mentor. You're being a coach when they need a consultant. And if you can identify which one you should be at that situation, I think people will stay for longer and people just get better results. It'll be just a more enjoyable way in which you can make more money and your clients can get better results.
Yeah, I just had this conversation like literally yesterday, and I kind of look at it as like a hierarchy. I think earlier on, you need kind of a coach who can teach you a lot of the specific things as you're a beginner. And then I think once you kind of graduate from needing the coach, you might need a consultant who's kind of gives you more in, like smaller tweaks and tactics that are, you're already doing the thing because you got coached into doing the thing. Now you actually need just tweaks and tactics to kind of get to that next level. And then for me, the mentor, and this is just how I look at it, a mentor is kind of at that highest level where, remember how you said at the highest level, like a lot of your mentors, they don't really give you specific advice. It's almost like therapy. I kind of look at mentorship as that third highest level where it's kind of like, you have your own business, right? So your solutions are always going to be different than someone else's. So the mentor is kind of to guide you, to me, the mindset and kind of framing for you and perspective so that you can find the solution on your own. That's how I kind of look at it. It's coaching is like specific cookie cutter, not cookie cutter, but almost like exact, literally like do this and you will succeed. That's a coach. Consultant is like, you should try this, this, and this, and make these adjustments to kind of hit that next level. And then mentor is like, you need to think this way and act this way and look at it from this perspective to maybe find the answer you're looking for. That's kind of how I look at it in three ways.
Yeah, I love that. I think a good way to summarize this is sometimes giving people the answer isn't the answer.
And you know what's cool too about this is I'm going to finish off with one more name dropped for the SEO, of course. I think it was Ty Lopez who said he had the three-thirds rule. Is it thirds rule? 30% rule, whatever. One third of the time you spend should be people below you. And I think that's a lot of times it ends up being coaching because you're just telling them specifically what works. One third of the time should be people at your level. And this is more social, but you can apply this to what we just talked about. I think a lot of times when you consult, it's a lot of times people like that are at a similar level to you. They just might not know what you know, or you might be doing it in an adjacent niche or on a different platform or something. So that's kind of like the consulting. And then one third of the time should be spent with people above you. And that's kind of where you see a mentor and stuff like that. So it's kind of along those lines.
That was a pod.
That's the pod.
Thank you, guys.